Warrior football. True Warrior football. True Warrior football.
You are listening to the True Warrior Football Podcast with your host, Corey Kid Smith.
All right, guys, we just finished the scrimmage here, and really, I talked to a lot of players, but I really got to talk to these two guys. My man, Keith Jackson Jr., and his star wide receiver, man. Y'all's out there like T.O. and Donovan McNabb for a little bit out there, man. Like, tell me through, just talk to me about today's, you know, game for you guys. Like,
today's game, it felt good to play on under the lights and just be around people I'm cool with.
Yeah, because you last year led our freshman team, and you did some great things last year. And you, sophomore, I'm sure, played a lot of JV. So does the game feel a lot faster for both you guys out here today?
Yeah, it's faster.
Now, what we have? We had two touchdowns for the two of y'all, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, the last one I liked a lot. Run me through that play.
I dropped back, and I read the safeties. Both the safeties split out the middle, and he just ran through the middle, and he just ran for the touchdown.
Did it surprise you how wide open you were?
Yeah, I caught the ball. I'm thinking, like, well, I'm about to get hit hard. I turn around. Well, it's daylight.
So okay. There you go. Got to take it to the end zone. Take it to the end zone. Now, you also played a lot on defense today as well. And you got the interception in the end zone now. Run me through that.
Yeah.
Run me through that.
The quarterback, he started rolling out, so he couldn't throw it to the other side of the field. So I just ran with him this way, and he ended up throwing it up to the receiver, and I just went up and got it.
Went up and got it. And, hey, I love it. I love it. There was a couple plays out there where you had to let the people know, like, there's a safety here, man. I'm going to make this play on you. You catch this ball now. Yeah, they thought, like I tell people last week, man, people think it's going to be sweet on the east side this year, but it ain't going to be sweet, right?
No.
It ain't going to be sweet, Jordan. That's what I'm talking about, man. Hey, great job tonight. Very proud of y'all. The future of Warren Central football, these two young men right here, Jordan Williams, Keith Jackson Jr. Hey, go out there, have a good time tonight, celebrate with teammates. Let's go ahead and do this all again next week, right?
Yes, sir.
There you go. There you go.
All right, so I'm right here, senior linebacker. All right, Lee Alexander.
Yes, sir.
My man. We senior years right here, man. Like, when you were a freshman, and you was out there. I'm like, man, this dude is really out here playing for us and making plays all over the field as a freshman, man. And it's like these years have gone by so fast for you. Does it seem like it's going like what do you think right now, man?
It's going like too fast. I feel like I've been in high school forever, honestly. Man. It's been a long time.
Old man Lee Alexander.
I'm saying, like, it's cool though. The game real easy for me now. Like, it's okay. Becoming real smooth.
Now, as a senior leader on the team, do you feel a lot more pressure to get these guys right? Being a signal caller, you know, getting the plays from Coach Tussie, Coach Temple, you know, all that stuff like that.
Honestly, not a lot of pressure because I feel like that's what I'm supposed to do. So I feel like it's natural for me to be a leader. So, like, okay. I like kind of leading, and so it comes pretty easy for me.
Got it. So after tonight's performance, what are your thoughts?
We just got to go to film, fix the small things. It's only the small things that kills us. Because we're a great team. We got great talent. We got great players. So we just got to fix a little small things that kill us, and then we'll be great.
I love it. We'll go in there, celebrate with your teammates tonight, and we're going to get ready for that team out south.
Yeah, sir. I got you.
My man. I got you. Lee Alexander, ladies and gentlemen, number 14. Hey, like I told y'all, man, True Warrior football is you're not going to get better stuff from our players, from the team, on a week-to-week basis than coming right here. So, hey. Stay tuned. I got some more great stuff coming up for you guys later in the show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, I'm joined here by our head honcho, the main man in charge, Coach Mike Kirshner. You guys may have seen he and I in my opening intro video part while coming. I was so happy after that moment, you know, after we beat Ben Davis at Ben Davis last year, 57-56. one of my all-time favorite moments, especially doing this show. And to get into that moment, Coach, like, I know you coming back here, a place where you played, place where you're from, and have an opportunity to coach us over there. When I say over there, over at Ben Davis. And in a hard-fought game to where, really, we could have kicked the bucket and rolled out and just said, okay, we're going to start all over again next week. But somehow, some way, our team fought back, and we had this tremendous, tremendous victory. And I'm just like, I was so floored with emotion and everything like that. Like, that's definitely one of the proudest moments of that. Like, I know I smoked you right there because you weren't even looking anywhere around. You're trying to get the team, and I just came up to you, and everybody's like, yeah, it was awesome, man. It was awesome. But I'd say thank you for delivering that moment last year for us. But let's get into everything else with you, man. How does it feel to be another year into coaching here at Warren Central? Everything that you've gone through so far as a head coach for our program, like, did you really anticipate everything you've had to do so far?
No, there's been a lot of trials and tribulations in the first year and a half, almost 2 years now. And part of that had to do with COVID. Okay. You know, we weren't in school when I first got here, so I was trying to round kids up for the 2021 season. We were trying to get workouts done after school, but they're not in school. Mm-hmm. So I'm going around every day and picking up a half a dozen kids to get them in here. We had a good summer, but the biggest change between last year and this year is just our physical strength. And what I mean by that, and you know from being around here for a long time, we have club members. Yes. Very similar to Ben Davis club members, because they were copied 20-some years ago when Kevin Wright got here. He copied Ben Davis's system of doing things. And last year on the team, we had a grand total of 59 club members, guys who could clean 235, bench 400, or bench 300, squat 400. We had 59 total kids. This year, we're at 129.
So we doubled. I love it.
Yeah. Our power clean went from 19 to 47. And so our off season, because we're in school full time, I had the kids full time. Not only were they working out in class 4 days a week, they were working out after school 4 days a week. And we were averaging about 90 kids every day after school, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, from December until the end of May. And it's made a big difference in us physically. All of our offensive linemen now squat 400. All clean 235.
Even better.
They all bench 250 or better. There's a couple of them that are at the 260, 270. A couple of them are in the 300-pound range. So our overall strength has gotten better.
Do you get in there and show them the proper form? You know, that ain't not how you clean 235, son. This is how you do it.
Yeah, well, I can't. No.
Not anymore.
But I'll tell you who's been a big help to me start off this football season and summer was bringing Coach Tutsi back. Because he's been in that weight room with me in the morning. I mean, they're the first three periods with him, and he's that energizer bunny that gets all the kids going, and he concentrates on the clean, and he's gotten them do it right, and he's focusing on technique, and he's been awesome. So – in our transition, there's been a whole getting to know each other, getting to know the program, getting to know me. You know, I've had several cookouts at my house. The last one, you know, we had 35 seniors at my house for dinner and had a great social time. And you know, it's been a process, and every day's a process. Just like today's practice was a little bit rough getting going, but it's a process. And we got to stay with it. We're doing some good things. We're not where we need to be yet. Mm-hmm. I know it. I can see it. But I also can see the growth and the change in what we're trying to get done. And not just on the football field, but bringing back alumni. You know, I had a meeting today that was purely an alumni. We're starting a football alumni club. I forget what the actual name of it is. It's going to be launched tonight. It's going to get shot out to every alumni. We've got like 700 football alumni in this thing that they're going to get an email about how they can join this club. By joining the club, you get your 5 tickets to the game. You get 5 T-shirts.
That's amazing.
You know, and I want those guys. Every alumni that's walked back on the field to watch practice, I invite them out. And I tell them to come onto the field. It's your field. just like it was my field in 1978 and all the guys I played with. It's Marshall Welton and John Warren and Gary McCall. It's their field. It's Darren Evans's field. It's Sean Hogan's field. It's their field, and they need to feel like they're still a part of it, because the one thing, and I guess the reason I've coached for 39 years is the one thing that still gets me is Friday night, man, and it's being on that field and knowing that I've come back. Now again, it's a turf field. It was grass when I was a kid, but
not very many turf fields or grass fields in 6A football anymore.
But walking out on that field for the first time last year and in the end zone were four or five of my former coaches. Lee Dilk was there. Yes. Dean Carbone was there. And Doc Green was there, because they were honoring, I believe, the 84 or 85 state championship team. Okay. Tony Burchett, who I coached with, was there, who was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And just shaking all their hands and getting to say hi and kind of reliving your past is all part of a very emotional journey for me, being back here and part of why I came back, me and my wife.
I think because for a while I was away from the program, which is hard to believe because I bleed this black and gold and it pours out of me and my veins and everything. So, but I was away from the program for probably about 3 or 4 years for whatever reason. It doesn't matter anymore. But I think it was around 2017, probably your last year over at Ben Davis, I started to feel more welcomed in the program. And 2018 came, I started to show, and then everything started to really gear back towards we were welcoming more alumni back into the program. Because guys have been saying, you know, outside of our 10-year reunions for our state championship teams that we've had, they weren't coming to many games. If they were coming to games, they weren't feeling, you know, truly welcome. But after those times, like I said, 2017, 2018, I started to feel more welcome. I started seeing more guys come out to games, be on the sidelines, cheering on our guys, coming out to practice. So I love hearing that you welcome so many of these guys back, because a lot of these guys say to me, you know, they miss the family and camaraderie that they had in our program. And we've had the father-son football game, football game, 2 years in a row. That's been a big hit. You recently helped out Deontay Buckley and his
Legends Camp
that he had a few weeks ago. That was a big thing. I had a lot of former alumni come back, help teaching kids. And that's really a big, fun thing. So I love the direction you're steering our program, because we definitely need that. And I see that, and I'm like, man, what does this guy have next coming up for us?
Well, I don't know, but I will tell you one of the neatest parts about bringing those guys back. Like last week, it was George Cheeseborough, all right, who was a stud here.
Oh, man.
Great football player. And so he comes up and introduces himself, because I don't know him. I was on the other side of the sidelines. I remember the name.
You need his jersey number and everything to be on.
And so he comes up, and the neatest part is the first thing we reminisce about is who played against who, what players I had on. And I said, well, I'm Coach Kirsch from Bennett. Well, we know who you are. He goes, I played against so-and-so. And we relive those moments, even though I was on opposite sides. Probably the neatest part is they don't look at me as the guy from the dark side. I'm the guy who's come home to where he was always supposed to be, and that makes me feel really good that I'm welcomed back with such open arms by even the alumni that we did battle with.
For sure, it's just like Darth Vader becoming Anakin Skywalker at the end of Return of the Jedi.
There you go.
You know, coming back to the light at the end there. But it is really good, and like I said, I saw what you were building with last year's team. I loved the game over there. I loved that comeback. But one thing I said after the game, and I put this out on Twitter, and I want to say I said it on the show here, is I didn't want that to become a moment where our team peaked.
Right.
And I felt like after that, it was just so hard to really capture what we had great in that game in that moment. And every week it was just a little bit less and much less and much less. And then at the end there, we're left holding the bag and we're on the sidelines and our season's over.
Mm-hmm.
Like
we were fighting a lot of off-field demons, for lack of a better word. There was a lot of internal stuff going on with the team, especially with the kids off the field, issues at home, issues in the classroom. We had to deal out some suspensions. Mm-hmm. There was just a lot of things that after that Ben Davis game began to unravel. We had some character issues. We had some coaching mistakes. Mistakes I made on my part that if I look back now would have done differently, you know. But I felt like I've always taken the approach that my job is to help kids be a better version of themselves or the best version of themselves and not necessarily what happens on the football field. And sometimes I carry that maybe to an extreme to where I hang on too long and it actually is disruptive to the chemistry of the team, but I want to help the kid because I never want to see a kid fail.
I get that.
You know, and so it's a fine line that you're always walking. And so I wish I'd have handled a few things differently at the end. You know, we like I said, we got to the sectional game and we held some kids out. We had some key kids like Joe Walker who was injured and couldn't play. And, you know, and give LC credit. They lined up and they hit us hard and they fought like dogs.
It,
and
it was a game that, you know, it was a perfect storm for them. Mm-hmm. And defensive coordinator Wayman Edmond, who is a former Warrior.
Yep.
I've had him on the show a few times as well. He had a tremendous game plan for us as defensive coordinator and executed well and didn't make it easy for us.
No. He took away what we did well. We didn't throw the ball very well. Ball was wet. I get all that. And, you know, and they'll tell you that once they saw Joe Walker wasn't playing, their level, they were going to double him. And the minute that happened, they didn't have to double anybody. So that helped their whole defensive scheme a little bit. And, you know, Joe demands your attention. You know, we've already gotten through the grapevine that, you know, Center Grove is going to try and figure out a way to double him. That's why JoJo needs to have a big game. You know, we need to be able to get him the ball, which is another story.
I feel like Joe, because last year teams were like, okay, it's kind of like, all right, we know they got Joe Walker. But this other guy, JoJo, mm-hmm. we have to be careful with him. I was like, man, if we get him the ball a couple times, he's going to be special. He's like, I said to him last week, he's like a Weapon X.
Yep.
Like, you get him the ball and he takes off. Like, he made a couple of great – I think his best play last year was an interception he had covering Omar Cooper.
Yep, absolutely.
And Atlanta is like, how do you recover to make a play like that?
When you were beat. He exactly. was beat and still recovered to make the interception.
And he's such a great athlete. He's able to play like that on defense and then come back on offense and still deliver something for us. You saw he stepped up for you last year against Bishop Chatard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, played quarterback.
This guy is truly special. So we have those two guys back this year. But mainly from last year, you say you made a lot of you felt like you made a lot of mistakes last year towards the end of the season. You said you felt like you have corrected a lot of those as well, or at least worked towards correcting them. I know it's still
right.
early.
Right. We are. And I think part of it, part of the correction came with the hiring of new coordinators.
Okay.
Bringing in Jimmy Graves and his 30 years of offensive experience, half of those at IU at the Division I level, and then bringing back Coach Tutt, who was instrumental in five of the nine state championships, the four-peat, one when he was the head coach, and then again as a D coordinator, I believe, in 09
yeah.
with Coach Hart. And then he spent the last 6-7 years at the college level coach soaking up all that knowledge. He's gone and visited with the Saints and the Patriots, and so he brings all that knowledge, and I think that helps with what I'm trying to do because I coordinate the special teams. And with their knowledge and their ability to run programs, because they've both been head coaches. And one thing Coach Delahan always told me, if you get a chance to hire head coaches, hire them because they know how to run programs and you won't have to babysit as much. And I think that's really huge in solving some of our problems. We've done some things in the off season to help with the team chemistry. I alluded to having a chili night at my house in January, a cookout at my house in May with bunches of kids. So we've done things like that to build a team bonding type situation. You already alluded to the father-son flag football and cookout. We had about, I don't know, people here night and
awesome.
Eating and having a great time. And we're getting ready to do a mom's 101 night where I'm going to teach football to the moms.
Uh-oh.
And And we're trying to do more things like that, because it's like I told the parents last week at the parent meeting, the biggest mistakes parents make at this age is they see their young man like a Chris Jordan who's grown, he's big, he cleans 325 pounds, and we think they're grown, and because they're big, but mentally they're still young boys, men,
for sure,
and they know where you're at in the stands, and you need to be in the stands, and you need to be in their lives, and fathers, you need to be fathers, not negative fathers, you need to be positive fathers.
The reason
in your
why so
lives.
Many kids when they come off the field they look back. Looking for where their parents are.
That's
sitting.
Exactly right. I could. I told them last week at the parent meeting, I can still tell you where my mom and dad sat every Friday night when I was playing. And now the home side is now the visitor side. But I could tell you where they sat on the west, the southwest end here in the second section end. They sat in the same place every Friday night.
That's amazing.
And, you know, as probably as the teenager kid in me is – I was probably a jerk to him at times. I didn't want him to be any place else than at the game on Friday night because it was that important to me.
Now, with a lot of things that you're implementing now with us, were these things that you took to implement when you were at Ben Davis and at for your time, your short time at Mount Vernon as well?
A little bit, but some of it's a little bit different.
Okay.
The one thing I learned at Ben Davis, and I'll share this story, may get a little long for you, but I thought because I was the head coach for the longest time at Ben Davis that I was just a really good football coach. Everybody kept telling me, Dick Delahan, what a good football coach you are. But then I went to the National Football Convention in San Antonio in January of 2011.
Okay.
And the keynote speaker's up there talking. There's roughly 8,000 coaches in the auditorium listening, college and high school coaches. He gave I believe it was Mark D'Antonio, gave this great presentation on motivation and coaching kids and all. It was great. The next speaker up was Jim Tomei and Bobby Bowden, who have both passed away. And they were going to speak on today's social issues of kids today. This is 2011. Social issues of today. And I look around the auditorium and it emptied. There was 300 of us total still there. Everybody else left. It wasn't interesting to them. But I don't go to conventions to drink beer and party and all that. I go to conventions to learn. So I sit there for the entire day. I just sit there and listen. And they started talking about how 13 teens will commit suicide every day in the United States. 5,400 teens will attempt suicide every day in the United States. 750,000 teens run away from home every year. They talked about teenage pregnancy, kids growing up without parents, kids living in toxic stress, and they're going on and on. I'm thinking, man, they're describing my kids. But see, I was always under the impression that I was a really good coach because I would tell those kids what to do on the field, how to do it, when to do it, line up, do what I tell you, do what I tell you. And that made me a good coach. And then Bobby Bowden said something. He goes, every year I get my seniors together. We have dinner, and then we do a leadership meeting. And in this meeting, every kid goes around the room and tells every other senior on the team his life story, where he grew up, how he grew up. And that bonds my team, he said. And I thought, I wonder what that would look like at the high school level. It's one thing to do with 21 and 22-year-olds, mm-hmm. but to get 16 and 17-year-olds to talk, that's a whole different scenario. So I fly back home. We get ready to have our January leadership meeting. My wife has chili for all the kids. They eat. They're playing video games in my house. They're having a good time. And they thought it was going to be like the last one. We're going to fill out John Wooden's Pyramid okay. of Success.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
And so I said, get your chairs in a circle. I had about 25 kids there that night. And I said, all right, tonight there's no pens or pencils. There's no paper. And I said, tonight we're going to do something a little different. I was sitting right here like you and me are here, and they're all spread around the room. And I said, tonight we're going to talk. Each one of you is going to share their life story. And I got the response I thought I would get. Everybody starts looking down. I'm not talking. You can't make me talk. I don't want to do this. And I knew that might happen. So I got out of my comfort zone and I told them my life story. I told about how I got brought home by the police in the seventh grade. And they're all perking up. They're perking up like, you did something. I said, yeah, I did. You know, I did something wrong. I deserve to be punished. But so I told them. I told them about my parents and my three brothers and my two sisters and life growing up for me. And then I turned to the first kid to my right, just like you and me are sitting here. And this kid lived five houses away from me on the west side. His name is Anthony, by the way. And he's a fireman in California, graduated from Wabash, is a father of two, and is doing
Sounds
really
amazing.
Well. And I turned to Anthony. I said, Anthony, you go first. And I knew Anthony. See, this one was easy for me because I thought I knew Anthony. see Anthony come down to my house all the time, eat, play basketball on my street. You know, I knew Anthony's little sister who would ride around the neighborhood with my kids. So I really knew Anthony. Anthony starts talking about how his dad worked for IMPD. His mom worked for, a real estate agent. And life was pretty good. He's got a sister. And then all of a sudden he got all choked up. And he said, but I don't get to see the rest of my family. And Bobby Bowden said, when it starts, don't talk. So I just kind of looked over him. He said, see, Coach, my dad's black and my mom's white. And our families don't believe in interracial marriages. So we're not allowed at family reunions. And all of a sudden, kid, it hit me that I knew him only as a football player.
Wow.
I didn't know him as a person. Next kid had a good story. Next kid was just okay. And then the fourth kid rolls up his sleeves and we're all just staring at him. And he says, you see these? And he's got these massive scars. He goes, this is where I tried to kill myself. And now my wife is in the kitchen crying. She can't hold, and we got 20 more kids to go. I don't know what to do. I'm so bent out of shape because I want to hug them now because I've realized how wrong I've been as a coach and how deep this gets. And finally we get to the last kid, and this last kid's name is Michael. Michael didn't make it. Michael's in prison. And Michael had a full ride to Western Michigan, didn't make it, got in all kinds of trouble. And he's holding his head and he's screaming as loud as he can. He goes, tell me I'm not crazy. Big tears are rolling off his cheeks. He goes, tell me. And after 2 hours, I break my silence. I said, Mike, who says you're crazy? He said, Coach, when I was in the sixth grade, I saw my mama get beat up by her boyfriend. And I swore if I ever saw that guy again, I'd fix him. When I was walking home from Chapel Hill Middle School one day, I saw him in the strip mall. I ran to my apartment. I got a bat, and I beat him, and I beat him bad. And he looks at me with these big tears in his eyes, and he says, Coach, please tell me I'm not crazy. And all of a sudden, you think to yourself, what do you say to him? He beat a guy almost to death. What do you say to him?
I don't know. What do you say?
I got up, and I hugged him. That's all I knew to do. I didn't know what else to say. I don't know how else to comfort him. But at that moment in time, I realized me and my staff were not good football coaches. So we immediately had a staff meeting because word had traveled through the coaching staff. I'm getting emails during the day going, what'd you do to these kids last night? They're a mess. Had a staff meeting. I said, we're changing our focus. Our focus is not winning championships at Ben Davis. It's no longer our focus. Whatever happens on the field happens, and if I get fired for it, I get fired. Our focus is to get every one of these kids to college with a chance to make a better life for themselves. That's our only focus. And you know what? When we started focusing on that, winning kind of became easy. It just kind of, because the love between them and us became so tight that we felt like we could get through anything. Now, we ended up losing the regional that year to Carmel.
You lost to Carmel.
11-9 after you guys got upset.
Yes.
Because we lost to you guys in the regular season. That was the woo-woo game in Buckley. We lost you guys 27-21. We lost a couple games that year.
Came back in that game. You guys were, we were up like 21.
And we had the ball late down on your 20 with a chance to win.
And Jordan Shine tipped it away.
He tipped it away against Monte McDowell.
And that was a game at your place. It was packed crowd.
Yep, packed crowd. And it got dead silent when Buck went down.
It did.
Yeah, but that was the year that led into that, you know. And then it took us a couple more years to get over the hump before we got to 14 and won it. But it changed my thinking, you know. And again, that didn't mean I changed how I coached. I'm still loud. I still get after it. I still want things done a certain way. But
it added something new for you.
Yes. And it changed how I saw kids. I didn't see them as football players. And that's a mistake I think a lot of us fall into.
Have you found a lot of our players on the team being as open to you and wanting to come to you and talk to them about things that got going on in their life?
We're getting there. There are several that now – and what's really neat is those kids will text me out of the blue, Coach, you doing okay today? On a Sunday, Coach, you okay today? Yeah, I'm fine. What's up? He goes, no, I just want to see if you were all right. He goes, you always check on me. I want to see if – so I know I'm getting there. But it's slow. We did in January at my house, we did the Share Your Life story with the 20-some seniors I had at my house. We had numerous kids crying, just crying because their lives are a mess. And it's the first time they've been able to share with a teammate outside of football that there's more going on inside their bodies than football, their brains and their stress. And I've spoke to just about every police department in the state of Indiana about how to see kids, and what happens when you roll up on a kid who's in trouble and that kid's in immediate fight or flight mode. And if you could just take them off to the side and walk with them and talk with them, you'll find they don't want to fight or they don't want to flight. They want to be helped.
I can definitely attest to that from my time working here in the building where I was a student supervisor, called to a classroom to, you know, escort a student out because he's getting loud with a teacher or something like that. And many times walking into a classroom and kids just being loud, just kids being kids.
Mm-hmm.
And what it boils down to is their attention, lack of, they want more of it. But you talk to them and you come to them in a way that they want, where I think Coach Hudson says it best. Most of these kids, they want to be coached up. They want to be taught. They want to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times if you come to them in a way that best suits them, you get a whole lot more done without having to spend so much energy and going to that extra level that's just going to make the problem and situation worse for that kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely understand where you're coming from with that. And that's really amazing. I've not heard anybody do that before, coach-wise and stuff. And to think Bobby Bowden, I would have loved to have heard Bobby Bowden speak. I think the two or three best coaches I've heard speak or that's been around, Frank Beamer, Virginia Tech. I heard Bob Stoops when he was still at Oklahoma. Oh, my God. Talk with Lloyd Carr, but didn't hear him when he was speaking with Michigan. But talk with him on a recruiting visit with other players that we've had. But just a legend like that, I just think, like, man, that would draw my attention. Yeah. And eyes. Like, I've been around great coaches here. I mean, I can go into a room right now and hear a guy like Coach Wright, for instance, when mm-hmm. he was around in the area. If he was coaching or teaching or talking about anything, you know, certain coaches demand respect when they start talking, especially about something that deep. So it's very surprising that so many coaches will walk out of, you know, listening to somebody like that. But, you know, you do say it right. You know, those conventions are right after everybody's season. Everybody's trying to wind down.
They're looking for jobs.
Yeah.
They're networking everywhere.
I've tried it myself. I made a drive down to Louisville one year thinking I was going to be able to get on with somebody's video program. Didn't work, so.
Right.
But, you know, coaching is very, it's very interesting how there's no right way to do it, but I think you and I are agreed there's a wrong way to do it.
Oh, there's definitely a wrong way. And sometimes we get heated on the field, but it's like Coach Tutsi was talking with the staff on Sunday. We had our staff meeting. He goes, you know, you can get into it with them. You can push them. You can ride them hard. But at the end of the day, they better know you care. And Coach Delahan always had this famous quote: "They don't care how much you know till they know how much you care." And you need to think about that all the time, because even in the classroom, even as a teacher, they don't care that you can solve for X 9,000 ways. Mm-hmm. They want to know, do you care about them first? Then they'll listen to how you solve for X. And so when you can get a kid to believe in you first as a person, you'll get more out of them down the road.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Well, Coach, I know you have a lot of things going on, but I want to do one more quick segment with you. Of course, you spent – because your first year as a head coach was 2007 at Ben Davis?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so from 2007 to 2017, a full decade.
Mm-hmm.
A full decade of battles. Absolute battles against us. And really, if I believe correctly, I want to say you ended your career with like a 3-1 postseason record against Warren.
Yeah, that would be correct. Yeah,
which is, I mean, that's incredible.
Doesn't happen to very many people.
I hate to admit it, but it is. Yeah, not very many teams could say that. So, especially as many times as we've gone back and forth. So, I just want to shout out a couple of games, players, and I want to have your thoughts and reflection on that. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, Desmond Tardy,
phenomenal, and. When he was getting them to that top, and of course we beat him in 02 in the mm-hmm. Mud Bowl out here, and then the next year 03, we knew we were going to have our hands full. Here's what I liked: no matter what we did defensively, and I was the coordinator back in, no matter what we did defensively, I could never get inside his head, and that bothered me. You know, it was never, you know, it didn't matter what scheme I brought up, what blitz I brought up, if I felt like we really got a lick on him, it never, he'd always smile. And I'm like, you know, I want him to be mad. I don't want him smiling, because if he's smiling, he's doing well. But we had a great game his senior year out here, lost 27-20, and he was in control. Probably one of the smoothest athletes I've ever watched play that position.
Which brings up my next player, one of your guys, James Banks.
James Banks, probably the number one athlete I've coached. I know there's people that would argue who's the greatest athlete. I'll share a quick story of James Banks. So it's my first year at Ben Davis in 2000, and we're in the sectionals against Decatur. And Decatur scores to go up 21-17 with about 45 seconds to go. And I was the D-line coach, but also one of those that right before James went out, he'd throw a couple passes. Mm-hmm. I was the guy that had to catch him, and then he'd go out. And
I think Coach Tuss was at Decatur that
yes,
time.
He was the D coordinator. Okay. And James goes, "What's the matter with you?" I said, "Man, I just left a head coaching job to come to the Ben Davis, and we're not even going to get out of the sectional." He goes, "What are you talking about? We're getting out of the sectional." He jogs out, drives us, gets it. There's 6 seconds to go. We're on the 5-yard line. We call our final timeout, brings the offense over. Dick Delahan says, "We're going to run this, and then James Banks goes, no, coach. Trust me, we're running quarterback draw, and I'm scoring." We run quarterback draw, score. He walks over, swats me on the behind, and says, "Told you we were winning the sectional." And I thought, man, do you have it. You just have it. You know what I mean? There's not many guys that are that confident. But for a guy his senior year to win Mr. Football as a quarterback, Mr. Football as a DB, and Mr. Football as the punter is amazing. Incredible. Now think about that.
Incredible.
Three positions.
There's so much. I think the next two guys, Jeremy Finch and David Bell, there are two, like, guys. Jeremy, of course, he could have won overall Mr. Football if not for a guy that was running the ball over and over into the end zone.
Right.
But, you know, Jeremy, I feel like, is our James Banks version, maybe better or whatever.
He had a similar play.
Yes.
He had the punt. Similar. James Banks had the punt play in the 2001 regionals against Warren. And then a few years later, Jeremy Finch does it to us. What year was that? 2005?
2004 regular season game.
Snaps it over his head, goes back, launches it. The kid catches it. We end up losing by a point in that game, and that led to a score.
It was a field goal, 31-28.
Yeah, that's correct. And I'm like, he just threw that ball 60 yards in the air. You know, and their kid's down there catching it, and my kid's like, he can't do that. Well, yeah, he can. Even though the guards were down the field with them.
You know what? The one time the Zebras got didn't throw the flag. Like, thank you, Russ. I appreciate that. But, yeah, Jeremy Finch and David Bell, those two guys were absolutely incredible. I think and now how voting with Mr. Football is, there will never be a guy that does what that. I mean, it's
David Bell had no business not winning. But I was sat in the voting meeting that day. And I was 4A then, because I was at Mount Vernon. So I was 4A. And all's like, I'm sitting there, and they're talking about all these kids, and there's 10 4A votes. And I'm sitting there. Of course, I just come from David's junior year when I was at Ben Davis, trying to defend him, trying to beat him, you know, because he was playing both ways. And I said, "Guys, I'm just telling you, there's not a better athlete in the state." He goes, "Well, you know, small schools, you know, what Kaiser's done." I said, "I'm not taking anything away from Kaiser. I'm just telling you." And on our table, 9 votes for Kaiser, 1 for David Bell, me.
Are you in?
So I knew he wasn't going to win, because he wasn't going to get the 1A, 2A, or 3A vote.
No.
So without the 4A, he had no chance.
And
he got the 5 and the 6A.
And here's the thing. There were people in 6A that voted against him. And really, the true travesty is Ramir Elliott should have been the one that – I mean, you look at what
3,000-yard rusher.
3,500 total plus yards overall. What he did in the state championship game was incredible. I mean, if you talk about, well, what did he do in the final game? I mean, he basically, David Bell couldn't run and do what he – so we relied on Ramir to carry us. He had 3 touchdowns in the game, over 200 yards. What more do you want the man to do?
Right.
And you look back at it, it's like, why is he not getting heavy consideration for it? Now, maybe, he split the vote, so he's supposed to be penalized for that?
Yeah.
But then it really bothers me, because then I see a guy like Carson Steele, who had a great year with half the yardage,
get
goes
Mr.
undefeated,
football.
Gets Mr. Football. Yep. There's no way, no way anybody can tell me a guy can do that and win it, and a guy can do twice as much and not win it.
Yep.
It makes no sense. That's the reason why I'm a huge advocate for, if they're going to do Mr. Football, need to break it down class by class.
There's no question.
It's you're cheating kids, and that's one thing I absolutely hate.
Yeah, I've not been a fan of it. I'm a voting member. I'm one of the 60, but it's been crazy because I know in 17, you know, there was talk that Reese Taylor didn't deserve it. And I said, well, he threw for 4,000 yards and rushed for 1,500. Show me another person.
Show me
one and against our schedule.
Correct.
Playing Warren twice and playing LC twice and
playing the Cardinals, playing the Center Rose.
Brutal.
Yeah,
it's brutal. You know, it's not. You're not playing Knox County High School. You know, it's brutal. It's different.
Absolutely, absolutely.
No.
And the last player that I think I want to ask you about, this guy right here is just we have a lot of great players, and I think this guy gets forgotten now because of so much talent. But we just talked about Ramir Elliott, but the first guy to rush for 3,000, Shakir Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And we played you guys in 09 in the Dome.
In the Dome, and he single-handedly won the game. He was the man.
Yeah.
Because we'd done a pretty good job defending the pass. We just couldn't – I mean, he rushed for, I believe, 300 and some yards that night.
Probably.
I mean,
it sounds about right.
He had four touchdowns. I mean, he was – and again, we missed three field goals because we didn't have a kicker per se. But and then to watch what he did at the college level – was just as impressive.
Yeah.
Because he's too small. He's too short. He's not fast enough. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Because there was something inside of him called heart.
Yes.
That was bigger than all your big backs. And he was tough.
Well,
to bring down.
There's so much with Shakir that, you know, if I had opportunity, if I was running a college program, I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring in a whole bunch of guys that may be better, but I know one thing. None of the guys I'm going to bring in are going to give me that.
Mm-hmm.
That heart, that extra effort, that determination to go the extra mile. Like, he really, truly never gave up when it was time. He took it to the next level. And you guys, I think that 09 – game against you guys where we go to overtime. I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Do you remember your quarterback from that year?
William Barksdale.
Okay, so.
Undersized, couldn't throw it very well, but worked hard.
You guys tried in overtime, it was like a reverse pass,
mm-hmm.
and they almost got it.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and
we were close.
My guy, safety Jerry Boyd, comes out of nowhere, and you guys had the ball first in overtime, comes out of nowhere, picks it off. And three plays later, we're in the end zone celebrating. I mean, those games, those moments right there. I know it's tough for you and
that
stuff
one
like
was.
That
you're
to
right.
Remember, but those moments in those games, they live forever. And I talked to you about this the other day when we were trying to figure out a schedule for this. All my time from I was with the program my junior year in 2004 till 2012 was my last year being a part of the program, and I told you. I was 9-0 going up against Ben Davis. 9-0 going up against Ben Davis until that 2012 year. And here we are, a game where we were up 3-0. A storm comes out of nowhere, blows in. We have to stop the game, come back the next night. Defensively, it was probably the best defensive battle any Warren Central Ben Davis games ever had.
Oh, to keep it to 6-3 for a final.
Well,
you think about the scores. You know,
yeah.
In 2010, we got beat 36-0.
Exactly.
You know, got whooped. I mean, we were not the same team that night.
And then for us to we were up 3-0, 3-0 with mm-hmm. a minute and a half to go, and for some reason, like. The tide turns, and you guys get two miraculous plays to go your way along. It was like a 50-yard bomb.
It was 57 yards, the first field goal the kid ever kicked in his life. He'd never kicked one. He was a soccer player. He had never kicked a field goal in his life. He was our kickoff guy.
Incredible.
But we used him because we knew the other kid couldn't get it there. But we knew this kid's leg was stronger, and then he hits it.
And see, that's the reason why you're a legendary coach, man. You know, you put guys in the right position. I'm looking forward to a lot of the games and stuff coming up this season. I may have put a lot of pressure on us already. interview with Colt with Kyle Niederer from IndyStar. And, you know,
we're back this year. I'll put you on the spot, Corey. Who do you got before we kick it back to Aaliyah? 6A title this year. Who do you like to win that thing?
You want unbiased or biased?
Give me your unbiased opinion on that.
Unbiased opinion. Okay, my unbiased opinion. I'm going to say it's going to be Warren.
Okay, I said unbiased, by the way.
Well, you know,
is that unbiased and biased?
Unbiased and biased.
That's fine.
I just see what we have. I see the talent that's coming in. I see these guys grinding. I see what Coach Kirshner's done. And also, here's another tidbit for you. The last four Warren Central coaches have all won a state title in their first 2 years.
Is that right? Wow.
Very true.
Wow.
And I think Coach Kirshner is turning the program around, getting the right guys in the right place. And it's going to be – it's not going to be no more 5-4 seasons over here on the east side. I can tell you that much.
You ask me unbiased, who I like in 6A. I got to come home.
Okay. We got some work to do, but we like where we're at. It may be a process, but it's like when we won it in 14, we weren't the best team during the regular season.
Correct.
We were the best team at the end of the season. And it's a process, and we just keep telling the kids it's a journey, so hang with it. We'll get there.
I love it. Well, Coach Kirshner, I appreciate it. You're a busy man, but you got some great stories, man.
Well, thanks. We could go all day. Just old, man.
You're seasoned. You're mature. Appreciate it, Coach.
Thank you very much.
Legendary
appreciate you
Coach,
covering us.
Coach Mike Kirshner for us. And ladies and gentlemen, make sure you tune in and subscribe to the show every Thursday. Make sure you come back, tell your friends, tell the Warrior Grace about it. Hey, I'm your host, Corey the Kid Smith. Let's listen to and watch another great episode of True Warrior Football. Warrior Band, take us away.